Good afternoon and welcome to the second show of Instant Property Services podcast. Rowan Merry here, the connector. Today I've got with me a young man called Kent Hewitt from Restorer Roof. He's one of my very best tradesmen, does a lot of work for us, repairing roofs when they blow off in storms, fixing tiles, all sorts of things. So very interesting young fella, and it's great to have you here, Kent.
Thanks, Rowan.
Tell us a bit about your background, mate.
All right, started off in retail, and from retail I bought my first business, and from that business I bought the next business.
What was the first business?
First business was a laundrette. And okay. Used that the equity in that business to buy a the Bob. By that stage, it was pretty much an apprenticeship in business. So I realised that it was not a business for me.
Okay.
From the, I had a pretty bad experience with that. Got out of it and started up Restorer Roof after contracting roofing for a few years.
Brilliant. What lessons did you learn from your experience?
Franchising can be a pitfall of hazards. That you, if you're in a business that's got very, very low margins, you're going to have a lot of trouble riding storms if you get quiet or if you run into legal hassles with your franchisor or whatever. It makes it very, very tricky.
Is there any good points about being a franchisor or well, franchisee?
Well, there's a lot of good points that you get training. So you can go into an industry that you're not aware of. There's systems in place and training in place to help you adjust to the situation. But it depends on the franchisor whether they're going to back you and help you throughout the period or just give you your couple of weeks training and send you out to the wolves, which in my case is what happened.
Oh, that's a shame. I suppose you look back on, I've had businesses before as well, and you look back on your early businesses as a real learning curve. So for me, I know that with my early businesses, the knowledge you get while you're in those businesses helps you so much when you actually get into a business that works and that you love and all that. Did you find that?
Yeah, definitely. It was a painful experience to start with, but when I look back now, I think it was sort of my business apprenticeship and I did learn a lot by it.
Fantastic. All right, mate. Tell me about your passions. I'll get back to the roof tiling in a minute. I want to find a bit more about Kent the man. What are you passionate about, mate?
Animals. I'm a big believer in looking after the animals. We seem to be sort of taking over the earth and they don't really have much say in it and seem to be scrutinised to, well, put through a lot that they've got no control over. And I just hate the thought of animal suffering and especially birds. I've got a bald cockatoo at home and he's like my baby. He's constant affection and a heater and he's got his own radio. And so, you know, definitely animals.
I've actually seen your bald cockatoo. He's called Foo. Very funny looking little unit he is.
He looks a little bit like a duck.
Yeah, but no, I actually, you've talked to me a little bit about this in the past, about your passion for that, and you've also talked about wanting to set up a sanctuary at some stage.
I'd love to. I'd love to set up a sanctuary for injured wildlife or just sort of a retreat where wildlife can go, especially at the moment we've got droughts on and there's a lack of food out there for them, and you're seeing a lot of cockatoos coming into areas that they shouldn't be in. And driving the farmers crazy as well. So it's somewhere they could go and there's water and an environment for them, specifically there with trees and a bit of protection.
So what's holding you back?
Well, financially, it's quite a large outlay, and to get people involved to do it, they want to see that there's going to be a large contribution from my side as well. So I think it's going to be a long-term project to get something like that up and going.
Okay. Well, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there listening that have a love for animals, so you know, if you're interested, contact Kent and see what you can get off the ground. That's great, mate. All right. I suppose before we get on to Restorer Roof, tell us a bit about you and your personal life. You're a single fellow. You've got someone in your life. You're married. What's going on? Let us know.
All right, I'm divorced. I've got a lady in my life at the moment who's moved in with me about 3-4 months ago. And we're just taking each day as it comes. There's not much to tell.
No, fair enough, mate. Well, good luck with that. I've actually met her, so she's a lovely girl. So I hope she listens to this and has a smile at that comment. All righty, let's get on to Restorer Roof. I suppose you can tell us a few of your tips for roofs and things like that. I've got a few questions. One would be, how often should someone keep a tiled roof maintained?
a tiled roof or a tin roof, any roof should be maintained annually, whether it just be gutters cleaned out, just inspected, make sure there's no broken tiles, loose capping, or the chimney flashings aren't blocked, skylight flashings aren't blocked. There's various ways that water can find its way into a roof, but just an annual inspection will alleviate most of the problems. And a word of caution that most of this work you can do yourself, but you have to be very, very careful.
Yeah, I suppose there's safety issues with getting on roofs and that now, because I know the OH&S laws have changed a bit. So how have they affected your business?
Largely affected the business, but probably for better for the long term, that now we have to use harnesses or guardrails on roofs, which does add to the cost of the job, but also adds to the safety in the person as security that while you're up in their roof, you're not going to fall off and crack their pavement.
Yeah, because that'd make a mess.
We got a phone call about a week ago from a lady in Altona. Her husband decided to jump up and fix his roof. He was on the second story part of the roof, fell off and came through the first story of the roof, and now he's in hospital in a pretty bad way. So security is up there, or safety is up there on the roof. You've got to be very careful. Another story I heard through the Roofing Association was a gentleman got up on his roof, thought it was a little bit dangerous, decided he better take measures into his own hand to protect his person, tied a rope around his waist and attached the other end over the roof onto the tow ball of his car, and off he went, and his wife decided to go shopping, jumped in the car, drove down the road 35 metres before somebody stopped her, dragging the poor old husband along, two broken legs, a couple of broken collarbones, and a trip to the hospital in an ambulance.
Lucky he didn't die.
Very, very lucky man.
I tell you what, that could be on Australia's Funniest Home Video. I'd love to see a video of that. That'd be pretty amusing.
I just cringe at the thought.
I suppose, mate, no, in your industry, safety has to be the number one issue above everything, so there'd be nothing worse than sending guys out to work, getting on roofs, and one of them not come home one day. So I do realise that safety is a huge issue now and always should have been, I suppose, but like a few blokes have suffered the ultimate peril and fallen off roofs before they've really brought in all these, you know, new rules, haven't they?
It's definitely up there with work cover as one of the largest industries that causes death and injury throughout the year. I think it was something like 80% of injuries occur from falls from ladders or heights.
Okay, so just tell me a bit about what you do when you go to a job. How do you do a job safety analysis? What do you actually do for each job?
Do a job safety analysis when the actual quote's done for the customer. So by the time the tradesman's arrived, he actually knows what he's up for. He knows whether to take a harness or whether we'll arrange rails on there. He'll know if there's corrugated fencing down the side of the house, if they've got some nasty dogs in their backyard or some pickets in their garden. He'll also have a detailed analysis of the roof, what needs to be done, what materials to take up.
Okay.
So we do all that
before. So tell me, how do you work out whether you would put blokes in a harness or whether you'd put the scaffold around the roof? What, you know, how do you work all that out, mate?
Well, if you get a roof on a 45-degree pitch, excuse me, a safety rail's not going to do a thing, because if you fall off or if you fall down the roof, by the time you actually hit the safety rail, which is attached to the guttering around the edge of the house, you'll be doing 60 k's an hour and it'll act as a cheese cutter, and you'll either come out with a lot of broken ribs and damage, or you could potentially slip straight through underneath it. So in that case, you're better off with a harness.
Okay. Very good. Mate, tell us about some of the materials you use.
One of the biggest things that's come around in our industry is FlexiPoint. Instead of using sand and cement to point with, we use a material called FlexiPoint now, and it's CSIRO tested and quality controlled. It's made in a factory, so it alleviates the tradesman mixing up a bad batch himself. It doesn't leach or fall out. It moves with the roof. It's got a 15-degree expansion with it. It's guaranteed independently by the manufacturer for 10 years, especially with valleys. Valleys are a gal tin surface running up the centre of your roof where two angles meet. And sand and cement, which is your normal mortar mix, won't stick to gal. So FlexiPoint will. So it'll stop your mortar falling out of your gal, creating a blockage, and in turn causing a leak.
Okay.
Other materials, not much has changed with regards to bedding. Bedding's still sand and cement. We use the sand and cement to sit the caps on. And the sand and cement only holds the caps at the right height and straight. FlexiPoint goes over the top. When we re-coat roofs, we use a NewTek sealer first, followed by two coats of NewTek top coat over the top of it.
That's the paint you're talking
about
there?
That's the paint.
Okay. What colour is the sealer?
The sealer is completely clear.
Okay. So how do you go about advising people on the colours for their roof and all that sort of thing? I see some pretty way out bloody colours out there. I've seen some absolutely terrible colours on roofs, and I reckon it spoils the whole house. So they're obviously not ones you've done.
Well, at the end of the day, it's the customer's choice. We can give them some advice on the colours, but we've done blue roofs, purple roofs, you name it. We've done the colours.
Would you paint a colour on a roof if you thought it's going to look absolutely terrible?
Depends on the client's conviction on the colour. If they were hesitant and I don't know, I'm thinking about this colour, probably not. Would walk away and say to them, get some advice off your relatives. Hire somebody who's actually an interior or exterior designer. Get some advice like that to try and protect them. We generally give them about three colours that would actually go with the colour scheme. The colour scheme, the best way to do it is stand opposite your house across the road and actually look at what colours you've got in your house. You're obviously not going to want a blue roof if everything in the house is green and red. But if you've got cream fascias and, say, charcoal gutters, then you know you can go either cream or charcoal. If you've got brown in your brickwork, you can use the browns or the tones from that, from your picket fence, your mailbox, your driveway, even the vegetation. As long as you pick some colours that are going to go together with the house.
That makes sense. Do you have any colour consultants aligned to your business?
No, we don't actually, because at the end of the day, we leave it to the customer's choice. And if we do that, then they may at the end turn around and say, we don't like the colour and we'll hold payment. We have had that happen, but most of the time we'll come to the party anyway and say to them, they've genuinely picked a colour and then at the end it's come out completely different to what they've actually pictured in their mind's eye, then we'll offer to either match half and half with them, or in some cases, if they're very upset, we'll just recode it again.
Fair enough. Mate, tell me about your target market. Who's your ideal client? Who are you looking for as a client?
We don't actually have a target market. We will work for anyone who wants work done out there, but I'd say 60% of our customers are aged 40 and over. And they're the people that the kids have basically nearly left home, and the kids are sort of at school and they've probably knocked a significant amount off their mortgage and they're probably renovating at that stage. We also do a bit for people who have retired and they're looking for security to know that in their retirement period they're not going to have leaks or anything in their roof. And also by that stage, they've generally got pretty awesome gardens that they want. They feel the roof's letting down the gardens. But then we have sort of your 20-year-olds as well that are buying and renovating. We have clients that will actually turn over houses. They'll buy just to sell and profit, and they'll want the roof given a bit of a makeover as well.
Okay. I suppose what most people don't realise is the difference a new roof, like, or a redone roof can make to the value of a house as well.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Because it's visual, isn't it? Like, you know, like a tiled roof that's really porous and looks pretty average can really pull down the price of a
house. Well, I think a lot of people, when they look at a house to buy, they get a bit concerned, you know, well, it looks like the roof's no good, we're going to have to replace it. And a lot of people sort of think that getting the roof done is going to cost them $10,000 to $20,000, where if you get the roof restored, it's a fraction of the cost, and cosmetically it gives the house a huge lift. And
what would the average cost be to restore it, like a 3-bedroom house, tiled roof?
Anywhere from about $2,500 to about $5,000 will put you in the ballpark, depending on the size of your house and which company you use. There are companies out there that have $1,400 jobs.
So. Yeah, it's good that you bring that up. I wanted to bring that up. I think some roof tilers, or the industry in itself, has a pretty bad name. I hear all the time, you know, even I see signs on lampposts, $1,200 and we'll restore your roof and all that sort of thing. I know when I mentioned that sort of thing to you, you really cringe at it. And tell me a bit about, you know, how you're trying to restore the name of roof tilers for.
Well, it's an unregulated industry, which brings around problems that if you actually have somebody do work to your roof, there's nobody you can really call if there's a problem. So we've gone out there with the idealism, I guess, if you like, that we're going to use the best materials and do the best job we can on roofs. But unfortunately, we do run up against people that are what we class as fly-by-nighters. They're in for the quick buck, in and out. They'll generally hang around for a year or two. There's even a group that's going around Australia, and they just go town to town to town to town, and they're traditionally your $1,250 signpost. You'll notice they come up once a year as they're passing through the town. But in that situation, you generally either get poor quality materials, poor quality workmanship, and a lot of heartache and tears down the track. So you have to be extremely careful.
Okay, so mate, you being so good, you must offer a guarantee then.
Yeah, we offer a guarantee of 10 years in all our workmanship, which is backed by the manufacturer's materials that we use as well. And that way it gives the customer peace of mind. We generally get clients too, and we'll do their job, and 3 weeks later they'll ring us and say there's a problem. And there's no problem. They just want to know that we will come back, that they've heard bad stories either before, during, or after we've done the work, and they get a little bit concerned, and they just want to test the waters and make sure there is going to be somebody there at the end of the day that will come back and look if there is a problem.
Okay. We, IPS being in the insurance industry, we get a lot of emergencies. Your response rate to our calls are fantastic. Like, you can sort of get blokes to a job within a couple of hours if we're desperate or whatever. Tell people how you're able to do that.
Well, we've generally got one person who's always flexible. We'll always have one person per week that's on a job that's flexible, whether it be the client says that, you know, I'm not in any particular hurry, or this particular person's just run around and he's doing cleaning out gutters for a client and things like that, where he can immediately stop what he's doing, jump in the car, and get to that person's property to save any more damage or water coming into their property.
Yeah, that's great. Skylights, mate. We see a lot of skylights in roofs. Yeah. And I know that I've had you out at a lot of them fixing leaks and all that. Why do skylights leak so often?
Skylights can leak for a number of reasons. One is, once again, it's an unregulated industry, so anyone can just start up a skylight company and out they go, and they probably won't have any idea of how roofs work, and they're just sticking skylights in, and they think silicon's their best friend, and they're jamming a lot of that around. Also, poor quality skylights out there. There's a lot of skylights that have got, if you feel underneath the actual plastic surface of the skylight, you'll feel vented mesh. And what happens if you get a massive storm, the water rushes down the back, down the roof, hits a flat part where the skylight is, and splashes up, hits those little grill part, and in it comes. And the other thing too is, a lot of people, they'll clean out their gutters and they'll maintain their roof, but they won't check the back of the skylight, the back flashing that's facing towards the top ridge of their house. It'll end up with moss or leaves or dirt or bits and pieces stuck there that actually interferes with the water flow coming down the roof.
Okay.
And creates a damming effect.
Okay, so it sounds to me like if people were willing to maintain their roofs once a year, it's going to save them a lot of money in the long run. Like,
yeah.
You know, you could call out like a roof company, they can check it all out. It might cost them $200 and they get a report, something like that. And they're not going to have the major works that, you know, are required if they just leave it and don't do anything for 10 years.
That's definitely the case. We quite often see people and we say to them, if you had have cleaned your gutters out annually, you wouldn't have had to have replaced them. But you pretty much halve the life of your gutters if they're not cleaned out annually,
yeah.
Especially if you've got trees around the house. And same with skylights. Skylights, they've got a galled surface flashing that runs around them. And once that galled surface is gone, then the tin underneath, it won't take long to get pitted and corroded and rust through.
I reckon it should be good for insurance companies too, because if the insured were actually getting their roofs checked each year, it's going to save them on a lot of claims, because, you know, when people get water through the house into the ceilings and that, the insurance companies are the ones that have got to pay out.
Unfortunately, most people don't look up at their roof. A lot of people, it's always there. They stop looking up and checking the condition of it, and they just forget about it.
Yeah.
It's either only when they're renovating or they've got a leak, they'll actually look up and they'll realise how bad it is. They just don't
look Maybe up. It should be something we put to the insurance companies, like, to
part of their policy.
Yeah, to have an annual inspection, like, you know, and that way they can save a lot on the payouts because they know their roof's going to be sound.
It comes back down to the part of workmanship, though, that it may open a can of worms that there is a lot of companies out there that don't have the reputation that will take advantage of their clients by doing it, which is the unfortunate part.
Okay. All right, mate. Well, look, I think you've given a lot of good information about roofs and all that. One last thing. If you were to build a new house, would you put a tiled roof on it or a colour bond roof?
If I was going to put a tiled roof, look, I would have either personally. If I was going to have a tiled roof, I'd have a terracotta tiled roof. The reason being is they just far outlast anything else on the market. They last longer than a colour bond, last longer than a cement tiled roof.
How long do they last?
Well, most of the time, some of them have got 150-year guarantees or 75-year guarantees, but we've been on roofs that have been 150 years old, and the tiles are still in fantastic condition. Cement tiles actually break down the top coating, which is why you've got to get them recoated or repainted. But Colourbond, nothing beats a storm in a Colourbond roof when you can hear the rain.
Fair enough. Okay, the next thing I'd like to talk to you about, mate, is that you have a new arm on your business, and that is a rendering department.
Yes, we have.
Why have you decided to head towards the rendering as well as doing the roofs?
Look, it complements our field. There's it was an opportunity there for us to do it. Rendering something I'm passionate about. I like the look of rendering.
How can you be passionate about rendering? It's one of the worst bloody jobs I've ever seen.
Yeah, but it looks visually fantastic at the end. You can take a house that's 40 years old and make it look like it was built yesterday.
Yep.
And the other reason is too...
And it adds a lot of value too, doesn't it?
It adds an extreme amount of value to the property.
I know when we rendered my house, like I had the old Mission Brown bricks and we rendered it and added about $80,000 in value, just the rendering and putting a nice garden around. It's like giving us good equity in the house. So, well, that's a good point.
And the other thing, all the work we do is on exterior of property. We don't want to do anything internal where we're in the client's way. It's just my philosophy on it, that the client can actually be at work and the house is still secure and it's an external service that we've got. And I actually rang up a renderer to get a quote once, and he told me that it was going to take 6 months before he could even look at the house. And I thought, well, that's just ridiculous. I liked the rendering and decided I'd check it out.
Can you do it yourself?
No. I could give it a go on my own house, but I wouldn't give it a go on a client's house, let's put it that way.
No, fair enough. No problem, mate. So the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, Kent, was you've just bought a couple of properties.
Yeah, I have.
I know you're interested in investing. Tell us about your property investing strategies and how you see property investing.
Look, I haven't got a great deal of experience with property investing, but I found a property that I was comfortable with. It had two units on the one block, a tight block, but it had a good location, nice and central to the city. In desperate need of renovation and a vendor that was desperate to unload the properties, I saw it as an opportunity too good to pass on, and luckily I was in the position to purchase prior to auction before everyone else got the same idea.
How'd you get into that position?
Well, just financially, because I'm self-employed, I had the ability to sort of take some time off work to check the properties out, and financially I had some money behind me to take advantage of it when it was there.
So how did you find out the property was on the market so early?
Got to say, I jumped onto realestate.com just out of the blue, and it was the first property that popped up, and I don't know, it was just one of those things that was meant
first
to be.
First property that popped up. Me and my wife looked at about 80 properties before we bought one, mate.
Unreal. Oh, look, don't get me wrong. I've looked at a lot of properties, but none of them have really appealed to me. This one popped up in realestate.com. It was the first listing in the category that I chose. And automatically, I liked the property enough to inquire where it was, drove past it, became more intrigued. It became a part of my thoughts, and I decided to act on it.
So you got it for a good price?
Got it for a very good price.
Below market value?
Definitely below market value.
They say that when you can get, that's where you make your money when you're buying the properties.
Yeah, look, it was one of those properties, though, that wouldn't suit everyone because it had such a large amount of work that needed to be done to it that you couldn't move into it straight away without sort of falling over your own feet.
Yeah, it's fantastic that you're going to be able to use IPS to do the property.
Definitely,
though,
I'll definitely use IPS.
No, that's good, mate. All right, so that's sort of what you like investing in, or are you interested in shares at all?
Look, I'm interested in everything. It's kind of my passion. I don't go to the pub and drink or anything like that. I just like business. I like doing bits and pieces like that. And
have you got one investing tip that you could share with the people out there?
Don't be scared to take risks. That's probably the biggest thing. I know a lot of people that have come across and said, only if I did or only if I could, or... You've sort of got to put yourself out there a little bit. I mean, don't take stupid risks. Get some advice, but don't be scared to take on a challenge as well.
Okay. Good one. All right, Kent. Well, it's been very interesting talking with you, mate. You've got a lot of good knowledge about roofs and investing and life itself, so it's been great. I'd like to talk... I have a tip of the week segment, and this week I'd like to talk about open book management. Open book management is where you open up the figures to all your employees. And it's quite different to how you sort of run a traditional business. Have you ever experienced anything like this, Kent?
Yes and no. I worked for a company in retail that had an open book management type system, but it was only the only only the half they wanted you to see that was open. It wasn't full open book management.
Yeah. I suppose from my point of view, what I'm trying to do with IPS is include everyone in how we run the business and include everyone in what we're trying to achieve financially and then give them a share of it so that they have incentive above just making their wage, swapping time for money. And I think it works pretty well because I find that the guys are really motivated to try and achieve our budget each month. I sort of liken it to playing football without a scoreboard. Most businesses are out there and they have, you know, their employees running around just swapping time for money. It's like football. If the players were out there and there was no scoreboard and there was no goalposts, there'd be no point, would it? So the way I see open book management is bring everyone in on what the business is actually trying to achieve so there's no surprises for any of the employees. We actually hold weekly meetings and so that we strive. So everyone in the business is thinking like an owner. So they're all getting a bit of business training and things like that. So I found that it's a lot better way to run a business, even from the owner's point of view, because often owners have got to make every decision by themselves. They don't allow the input of their employees or their second in charge, and it's been a great help. Been a real good help to IPS and a really good help to me personally. So my tip of the week is if you're in business, have a look at the open book management style of business. Okay, now I'm going to go on to the quote of the week. Quote of the week is give until it hurts. And for that, what I mean by that, and that's my own personal quote, is give until it hurts is help as many people as you can. Put as many people in touch with people that can help them as you can. And you get a good feeling from it. It's sort of selfish in a way. You're out there, if you're helping other people, you feel good anyway. So I know you do a bit of that, Kent. You're always trying to help other people learn about business and all sorts of things like that. And if you can put people in touch, you know, what do you think about that, mate?
Yeah, it's just one of those things that in the everyday life, you just look out for somebody that occasionally needs a help and
yeah,
and you feel sorry for, well, not feel sorry for, but you feel some people's
plight. No, you do. You feel sorry for them. Mate, you see people out there in business, they're having a crack, but they have no idea what's really going on, do they?
Yeah, because they're not sort of stopping and sort of smelling the roses as they go. They're so focused on where they're going, they're not looking either side of them to what's happening around them as well.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I'd also like to give a business hint this week, and it's around the point of your target market. A lot of businesses are out there and they think they can service everyone and they've got the door open for everyone and every client that comes in the street, they want to help, okay? And that's very nice and that's lovely and that's all feel-good stuff. But what I try and do with IPS is our target market is insurance companies, right? We really believe we can help insurance companies achieve their goals by getting quick service. The only way an insurance company can prove itself is when there's a claim. And if there's a claim lingering on for, you know, 2 or 3 months, that looks bad on the insurance companies. The people aren't going to go ahead and renew their premium. So that's our target market. But we get a lot of people in off the street that want a plumber or they might want a roofer or they might want this. So what we tend to do is just put them in direct touch with that tradesman and that helps them. It's part of giving. We don't make anything out of it, but we feel good because we've helped that person and they're getting market price, which is, you know, what you want. I suppose I liken it a bit to this analogy. You ever been to a nightclub and you walk up to the front of the door and there's the red velvet rope standing between two brass poles and there's a bouncer behind it. And he says, oh, you know, you're on the invitation list. Welcome. It's great to have you here. He lets the rope down and in you go. And you feel like a bit of a star. Well, that's what I want to do with my clients. You know, when they come to IPS, I want them to feel like, yes, you are part of my target market. We connect with you guys. We, you know, we are here to help you and serve you. And yes, the money's there as well. Like, you know, because if you're in business to make money, but the reason is if you have it with a target market, you can really focus all your efforts on that market. when you open, you know, your marketing, all sorts of things. When you're open to sort of having everyone doing business with you, it actually hurts you, not hinders you, if you can specialize in one area. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but, you know, to me, it really works for us. I know I went through, when we first started the business, thinking that real estate was going to be our target market with people doing up their homes for sale. And we still do some of that, but the need's not there as much as insurance. You know, like, there's always something happening every day. There's damage happening, water damage, impact damage, malicious damage, storm damage. So there's, you know, there's a lot of work. The work needs to be done and needs to be done quickly, so it works well for us. So, mate, I think that it might be good if you had a real good think about getting a target market, specialise in one area, and see if that makes any difference to your business. What do you think about that, Kent?
Yeah, we'll definitely go through and have a look and find out where, you know, the percentage of our clients coming from.
Yeah.
And it's very hard for us, though, because we do run a broad spectrum. Basically, any homeowner can contact us, or real estate. Or
it's interesting. It's sort of, it's a real interesting and touchy subject for some business owners, because I know you deal a lot in South Werribee with the Italians.
Yeah, they tend. They
yeah, maybe me. You should specialise down there, mate.
I think we could just about earn a living from South Werribee.
Yeah, well, that's good.
But, I think that comes down to more having a good connection with your clients. That if you exceed exceed their expectations, they're more than happy to give a good referral for you, and Werribee's sort of a testimony to that. That's a very tight-knit community, and once you do one job down there and meet or exceed their expectations, it just seems to keep rolling.
No, that's great. All right. Well, look, mate, I'd like to thank you very much for coming in this week and speaking on our podcast. It's been fantastic having you. I hope everyone out there gets a lot of information from what we've talked about. And I'll sign off for the week. Thank you very much, Kent. It's
been
a pleasure having you, mate.
Thanks, Ro.
If you have any questions regarding our podcast today, feel free to contact me at Rohan, R-O-H-A-N, at instantproperty.com.au. And we'll answer them on the show next week. Also, next week we have Shane McIntosh on the show. Shane McIntosh is a bit of a computer guru. He's into property investing. He's into personal development. So he'll be a very interesting young fella to have a chat with. I'm sure that we can all learn a lot from Shane. So look forward to next week, and thanks for listening.